Welcome to the Skokie Kolo Podcast. Here you can listen to recent shiurim given by members of the Kolo and special guests who spoke at the Kolo. For older shiurim, open the Learn tab above and select Audio Archive.
My name is Dovi Turgeltov and I'd like to share with you a Dvar Torah on Parshas Vayechi. The Pasuk tells us, B'choy Yevarech Yisrael Leimer, with this we should bench the Jews, saying, Yisimcha Eloikim Kefraim Kemenashe, Hashem should make you like Ephraim and Menashe. In the Targum Yoinesan it says that every Jewish baby on the day of his bris, we should give him this bracha of Yisimcha Hashem Kefraim Kemenashe. So, why specifically by the bris does the Targum Yoinesan say that we should wish the baby with this bracha? In order to understand this, we have to understand what this bracha means altogether. Why do we single out Ephraim and Menashe more than the other Shvatim? Why don't we say Yisimcha Leikim, Ruvain, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar? Why specifically do we say Yisimcha Leikim, Ephraim and Menashe? And the answer is, what is the difference between Ephraim and Menashe and the other Shvatim? Where were Ephraim and Menashe raised? Ephraim and Menashe were raised in an area of Nisyonis, of tests. They were brought up in Mitzrayim. They were brought up alone. They didn't have anyone together with them. And in spite of everything, they grew up to become the holy Ephraim and Menashe. And that's what we're wishing our kids when we give them this bracha, Yisimcha Leikim Ephraim Menashe. We're living in a generation where everything could go against our children, whether it's through technology or society as a whole, the morale of society. We say, in spite of it all, you should grow up, Yisimcha Eloikim, Kefraim Kemenashe, you should grow up with that same strength, like Ephraim and Menashe. And with this in mind, we can understand the pasuk that Yaakov said to Yosef, V'yata shnei benecha hano'ilodim l'cha be'eretz Mitzrayim ad bo'yalecha Mitzrayim lihem. These are your children that were born in the land of Mitzrayim before I came to Mitzrayim. They're my children. What is the pasuk telling us? Until I came to Mitzrayim, they were born to you. What Yaakov Avinu is trying to say is that even though they were born to you before I came to Mitzrayim, before me and the Shvatim came to Mitzrayim, and we elevated the levels of the Yidden, they still remained on a great level to be considered one of the Shvatim. This Vasemis takes us a drop further. He explains the Nusach of the Bracha Yisimcha Leikim Kefraim Kemenashe. Normally, as the generations decrease, the levels decrease. So we're saying Yisimcha Leikim Kefraim Kemenashe, that Ephraim and Menashe are considered one of the Shvatim, and they weren't influenced by the fact that there's Yerida Sadoris, lowering the generations. And that's what we want to wish our children. You're a generation lower, but Yisimcha Leikim Kefraim Kemenashe, you shouldn't be influenced by the lower generation, and you should still remain the same level as the previous generations. That's why we can understand the Targum Yoinesan, specifically by the bris. As the child is going into his introduction to Yiddishkeit, that's when it's apropos to give this bracha, Yisimcha Leikim Kefraim Kemenashe, that as you're going into Yiddishkeit, this is the tool that you need to be like Ephraim and Menashe and not be influenced by the outer society. So let's take this bracha of Yisimcha Eloikim Kefraim Kemenashe. There's a lot going against us, but let's take this, and as we're going to say at the end of the parsha, Chazak Chazak V'nis Chazek. Have a great Shabbos.
Hello, my name is Ari Zendik, and it's my honor to share with you a Devar Torah of Parshas Vayechi. In the beginning of the sixth Aliyah, after Yaakov Avinu finishes blessing his 12 sons, the Pasuk uses a very strange language. It says, these are the 12 sons of Yaakov. This is what he spoke to them. Ish asher kivirchaso, each one, according to his blessing, berach osam, he blessed them. The wording is inconsistent. Each one, according to his blessing, in the singular, berach osam, he blessed them. In the plural. And Rashi picks up on this. Why does it say Berach Osam in the plural? Since he gave Yehuda the strength of a lion, and to Binyamin, the grasp of a wolf, and to Naphtali, the swiftness of a hind. Yachol, I might have thought, shelo kilalon kulam b'chol ha-brachos, that he did not include each one of the children in each of the brachos. Talmud lomar, berach osam. To teach you otherwise, the Torah says, berach osam, he blessed them, meaning, although he singled out each shevet and its bracha, or the one that would come to fruition with that shevet directly, really, all of the brachos came true for all the shvatim. A beautiful proof to this is that here in Vayechi, Yaakov says, Gur Aryeh Yehuda, that Yehuda is a lion cub. And in Sefer Devarim, in the very end, in Mezos HaBracha, when Moshe Rabbeinu is giving brachos to the shvatim, he says, Uladan Amar, to shevet Dan, it is said, Dan Gur Aryeh, Dan is a lion cub. How did this come to be, though, that if the bracha was given to one shevet in particular, that it would come true for all of the shvatim? To answer this question, Rav Yosef Salant, in his Sefer Be'er Yosef, says, look back at the beginning of the brachos, the very beginning of Revi'i, Perek Memtes Pasuk Aleph. Listen to how repetitive the psukim are. Vayikra Yaakov el banav, Yaakov calls to his sons, Vayomer, hey asfu, gather, ve'agid alachem, is ashi yikraeskem ba'achrisayim, I'll tell you what's going to happen in the end of days. He told them to gather. Pasuk Beis begins, he kavtsu, gather together, vishimu b'nei Yaakov, and listen, sons of Yaakov. Why does he say twice, hey asfu, to gather, and he kavtsu, gather yourselves in? So the Medrash says, at this point, Yaakov Avinu was commanding them about achdus. You have to be an asifa achas, one gathering. This way, even though a bracha is given to one shevet, that shevet will be the mayan, the wellspring that that bracha shoots out of, but it'll overflow to the other brothers. But that's only if they're all ba'aguda achas, if they're all in one group, then the bracha of one spills over to the other one. But if they're b'machlokes, if they're arguing, if they're not together, then the bracha of one shevet will not work for another shevet. This stress on achdus, on unity among the brothers, might be able to help answer a difficult question within the brachos of Yaakov, that if you look at the psukim that he spoke to Shimon and Levi, seemingly there's no bracha at all. He hints to the fact that they had the team of Korach come out of them, the fact that Zimri and Cosby, that came from Shimon, their part in selling Yosef. And then he says, Arur Apam, cursed is their rage. It seems like not a blessing at all. But if you look at the beginning of his words to Shimon and Levi, Yaakov says, Shimon v'Levi achim. Shimon and Levi are brothers. And the Or HaChaim HaKadosh comments, Ki yeshnam ba'achva b'tivam. They are naturally pulled to brotherhood. V'da'as acha shaveh. They have one united mind, k'da'as achim, like true brothers. V'davar zeh lo yishvu b'chol achim. And not all brothers are like that. So even Shimon and Levi, that seemingly did not get a bracha at all, he is stressing the fact that they have achdus. I saw that this exact question of switching from the singular to the plural in a bracha is asked earlier in this week's parasha by Rav Zalman Siratskin, the Lutzker Rav, in his Sefer Aznem LaTorah. Yosef brought his two children to Yaakov Avinu, their grandfather, for a bracha. And we know the story that although Menashe was the older one, Yaakov Avinu put his right hand on Ephraim and his left hand on Menashe. Yosef's thinking, here we go again. Jealousy is going to happen among brothers. He talks to his father. No, that's not the right way. But listen to the words of Yaakov Avinu. Perek Memches, Pasuk Chaf. Vayavarchem, and he blessed them, Bayomahu Lemor, on that day, saying, Becha, in you, in the singular, Yevarech Yisrael Lemor B'nai Yisrael, will bless, saying, Yisimcha Elokim Ke'Ephraim Lechamnashe. Hashem should make you like Ephraim and Menashe. If he's blessing them, Vayavarchem, as the Pasuk begins, why does it say, Becha, Yivarech Yisrael, in you, B'nai Yisrael will bless, in the singular? It should have said, Bachem. Similar question to the one we started with. So most of the Mefarshim on Chumash, all the ones that you'll find on the page, will say that Becha, you in the singular, is not referring to Ephraim and Manasseh. Rather, it's referring to Yosef. People will take Bracha from Yosef. But Rav Zalman Tzuratzkin suggests that this is a remez that Yaakov is giving to Ephraim and Manasseh. Sheha Bracha Techo Alehem. The Bracha is going to take effect on both of you. Rak Asher Tiya Achdos Beinehem. Only when you have brotherhood and togetherness between you. Many Svarim, including the Igra Dekala, the Altam Navardak, all comment that that's why he was excited to give them a bracha. Even though he placed his right hand on Ephraim, he saw that Manasseh didn't get jealous, and Ephraim didn't get haughty, unlike what happened with his own brother Esav. So he gives him that bracha that Bnei Yisrael should take strength and blessing from you, that you have this feeling of achdus. The Beis Yosef in Siman Tav Kuf Nun says that Asara B'Teves is different than the other fast days. In what way? Any other fast day, if it falls out on Shabbos, we'll push it off to another day. However, Asara B'Teves, the truth is, it cannot fall out on Shabbos nowadays. But if it did, he quotes from the Avudraham, that we would fast even on Shabbos. And the Beis Yosef asks, how could that be, that we would fast on Shabbos? Rav Baruch Simon, Rosh Yeshiva Yeshiva University, says in his Sefer Imrei Baruch, that the Chassam Sofer answers this question in his Siddur, in the Pirush on the Slichos of Asara B'Teves. He writes that in the year that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it was decided on Asara B'Teves of that year that it would be destroyed. And so too, on every year, on Asara B'Teves, there is a Gemar Din, there is a decision. Will there be a Tisha B'Av this year? Now we know, when it comes to Shabbos, so for something that happened in the past, for example, a Yahrzeit, you're not allowed to fast on Shabbos. But there is a type of fast that one is allowed to have on Shabbos, and that is a Tainis Chalom, a fast over a dream that a person is really scared about. And for him, it is oneg, it is pleasure, that he is fasting and hopefully avoiding that tzara to come in the future. So therefore, a fast like Tisha B'Av, which is mourning the past, that doesn't push away Shabbos. But the fast day of Asara B'Teves is really on a tzara ha'asida, on a bad thing that may come in the future. And that can push away Shabbos. Rav Shlomo Fisher, in his Sefer Dereshos Beis Yishai, asks that with the other fast days, Shivas V'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, historically, they were a day of Peranos B'Yisrael, they were a day of calamities even before the ones that we know about. For example, Shivas V'Tammuz was the day of the Chet HaEgel, and Tisha B'Av was the day of the sin of the Meraglim. But it's unclear what happened on Asara B'Teves previously in history that made it a day that was for Peranos, for calamities. So he suggests that perhaps the sale of Yosef took place on Asara B'Teves, because we don't know when it happened. He wanted to suggest that maybe that happened on Asara B'Teves. And even though there is no proof, perhaps a hint is that the mazal of the month of Teves is a gedi, and that gedi is a sign of the sale of Yosef, like they slaughtered the goat to dip the coat into. What comes out is that this avera of hatred between the Shvatim happened on Asara B'Teves. And we know that we're still suffering for the sin of the sale of Yosef. And in every year, it's determined, on Asara B'Teves, do we, as Bnei Yisrael, have this feeling of Achdus? And if we do, if we're worried about each other, this is Asara B'Teves, then perhaps this year, there won't be a Tisha B'Av, and we'll have the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, the Karov. Have a great Shabbos.
Hello, this is Ari Burian. In this week's Parsha, Parsha's Vayechi, we finish the first Sefer of the Torah, Sefer Bereishis. And in the very last Pasuk of the Parsha, the very last Pasuk of this Sefer, we are told of the death of Yosef. It says, Vayamas Yosef ben Mea Ve'eser Shonim, that Yosef died at the age of 110 years. And Chazal tell us that Yosef died before all of his brothers. He had a slightly shorter life than they had had. And there's many different reasons that Chazal say why did Yosef die before his brothers. The Gemara in Sota says because he was involved in Rabbanus, he was involved in leadership, separating himself from his brothers and having this new role, that caused him to live less time. So that's an idea that would need to be explained. But I would like to focus on a different idea, one that's mentioned in the Chizkuni. And the Chizkuni says the reason that Yosef died early was because he embalmed his father Yaakov when he died. At the beginning of this parak, when Yosef went to his father, when his father was dying and he passed away, the pasuk says, Vayitzav Yosef es avadov es harofim. Yosef commanded his servants, the doctors, lachanot es aviv, to embalm his father. Vayachantu harofim es Yisrael. And these doctors, they embalmed Yisrael, who is Yaakov, in order that his body shouldn't decompose. And the Chizkuni says, because of this, which we know in halacha, it's very important to bury a person right away, to not delay. There could be reasons why Yosef chose to embalm him. Maybe so his body went decay on the way to Eretz Yisrael, which was a long journey and it was very hot outside. But either way, the Chizkuni says because of this action, he was punished and lived a shorter life. And really this needs to be understood. What was the connection of embalming his father and him having a shorter life? So in the Sefer Chanukah Satorah, he points out that there's a famous idea that David HaMelech, King David, lived to be exactly 70 years old. He passed away when he was 70 years old on his birthday. And why did he have exactly this number of years? So there's two different ideas in Chazal that Chanukah Satorah brings. One is a famous idea, maybe you've heard before, that Adam HaRishon, Adam the first man, was supposed to live for 1,000 years, and he was told in the future, a king of Israel, who was not given any years to his life. And Adam HaRishon offered up 70 years of his own life. He says, I'll be glad to give him some time for my life. And Adam HaRishon, because of that, lived to be exactly 930. He died 70 years before he hit that 1,000 mark. He was supposed to be the oldest man who ever lived, but instead he lived only to be 930. But the second reason that Chazal say, why did David live for exactly 70 years, is that he got these years not from Adam, not from Adam HaRishon, but from Yaakov and Yosef, who both lived less than the amount of time they were supposed to live. We saw that Yitzchak Avinu, who lived to be 180 years old, that was the time of completeness of his life. But Yaakov only lived to be 147, because when he spoke in front of Paro in last week's Parsha, and Paro asked, how old are you? And he said, my years have been long and difficult, and I have not yet reached the age of my fathers. So because of the words that were spoken, he lost 33 years of his life. He died at 147, and he lived exactly 33 years less than his father. Similarly, we see by Yosef, Yosef didn't reach the level of his father. Yaakov lived to be 147, and Yosef only lived to be 110, like we just mentioned. So the difference there is 37 years. So if you add the 33 years that Yaakov was lacking from his father, and the 37 years that Yosef was lacking from his father Yaakov, 33 and 37 is exactly 70. And those were the 70 years that David got from the 33 years that Yaakov didn't get, and the 37 years that Yosef didn't get. These years were then transferred over to David HaMelech. So what was the big issue that Yosef embalmed his father Yaakov? Is that the Gemara in Taina says, Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Yaakov didn't actually die. And if you look at the Pasuk in this week's Parsha, by the other forefathers, by Avraham Yitzchak, it says they died. But here it says, Vayasef raglav al mita, that he drew his feet back into his bed. Vayigva, and he expired. Vayasef al amo, and he was gathered up into his people. It never actually uses the word meis. It never uses the word that he died. And there's many different explanations for this. But the Gemara seemingly says on some level, Yaakov Avinu never died. So what was the big sin of Yosef embalming him? By Yosef embalming him, he's expressing this idea that Yaakov is no longer alive. You don't embalm someone who is still alive. So if he really believed of Yaakov Avinu lo meis, so what's the lack of years between Yaakov and Yitzhak? There's none, because Yaakov never stopped living. So he didn't stop at 133, he didn't stop at 147, he didn't stop at 180. He went all the way forever and ever and ever. And if that's the case, then you can't learn the 70 years of David came from Yaakov and Yosef. And had Yosef shown on the external level this belief that Yaakov was still alive, then he couldn't have lost his own years to give to David HaMelech, because there would be no years for Yosef to give if Yaakov didn't give as well. But because he embalmed him and he showed this idea, this belief that Yaakov was no longer alive, so now it's possible that if Yaakov was giving 33 years from his life, Yosef would give 37 from his and he would die early as well. And the Chanukah Satorah wants to explain the Chizkuni, the reason that Yosef died early was because he embalmed his father and he showed this understanding, this belief that his father was no longer alive in the world. And what's the big deal of Yosef not showing the world that he believed that Yaakov was still alive? The idea of Yaakov still being alive is not necessarily that he physically was alive. We see that Yaakov, we go visit his kever in Maraseh Machpelah. but the idea that when a tzaddik reaches perfection, death does not have to be something that's difficult, doesn't have to be something that's painful. Chazal describe it as a person just removing the garment that they're wearing. When the soul takes off the body, it could be something that's not painful at all. It's just the next stage in their journey. But when you become too connected to physicality, it becomes a very difficult, very painful process. And that was the idea that Chazal was trying to tell us of Yaakov Avinu lo meis, that Yaakov did not die, that even though he might have physically left the world, but his soul did not change its status whatsoever. His soul was just as strong when it was in the body as when it left the body. And there was no direct pain, there was no discomfort, no difficulty with the soul leaving the body. And that's something that obviously Yaakov Avinu could reach that I don't know if anyone else in the world ever could or ever will reach. But it's something to strive for, that the more we connect ourselves with the physical, the more difficult for us will be to make that transition to Olam Haba when it comes time. But the more you tune yourself to the spiritual world, the more you connect with Torah and with the mitzvos and with Hashem, then when it comes time for someone to move to the next world, it'll be like taking off a garment. The Chazal described the least painful death is like taking a hair out of a cup of milk, that there's really no connection at all, you just lift it out and it leaves. Versus the most painful death is like pulling a thorn out of a ball of wool, where it drags the wool with it. And we should all be zocha, the opportunity to focus on the spiritual above the physical and live our lives so that we're almost in the next world. And when it comes time to go to the next world, it'll just be like taking off a cloak, just like Yaakov Avinu lo meis, and lives forever in this world and in the next world. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Shalom Aleichem, everyone. This is Eric Goldman, and it is my honor and pleasure to share with you words of Torah for Parshas Vayechi. As we've discussed many times, coaching the high school hockey team provided me with many lessons for life. One of the dilemmas that came up a number of times over the years was when I had a player who, on the one hand, was very talented. At any point during the game, he could score a goal, make an amazing play, and really uplift the team. But on the other hand, the player was also very impulsive. And at any point, he could just drag your team down, draw a penalty, bring the whole atmosphere and the whole feeling and stop the whole momentum of the game. And it was always a very serious challenge of what to do with a player like that. Do you give him the playing time? Do you want him on the floor? Or do you have to hold him back and say, well, we just can't trust you? Now, obviously, on a very different level, Lahavdil, Yaakov Avinu was giving the bracha to his children, to the Shiftei Kol. And the first, of course, is his Bechor Reuven. And he says to Reuven, Pachas kamayim al tosar. You act impulsively like water, and therefore you cannot be first. Being the Bechor, you should have been the king, your descendants should have been the Malchus, should have been the Kahuna, but we have to take that away from you. And of course, looking at the Shiftei Kol, looking at Reuven, we're not judging Reuven on the level that we are judged, but rather on the level that the Shiftei Kol are judged. But Yaakov saw something in Reuven that said, with that type of impulsivity, we cannot allow you to have the kahuna or the malchus. And Rav Shlomo Volbi elaborates on why it is that someone who has that impulsivity, who acts out of instinct and doesn't think and just jumps into action, that person cannot be a kohen, that person cannot be a king. But for us, on our level, in living ordinary lives, this is very much applicable to us as well. How often during the day do we just act automatically? Just out of instinct, something comes to our minds, we start feeling an emotion, and that pushes us to act. And without thinking, we're doing something that we know we shouldn't be doing, or we're doing something that we didn't want to do. But our emotions get the best of us. Our desires get the best of us. Very often I'm discussing with teenagers the concept of having a filter on their phone. And one of the most common questions I'm asked is, come on, Rabbi, we all know how to get past these filters. No matter how strong you think your filter is, I guarantee you at some point we could get around it. So what's the point? How does it help to really have a filter? And one of the things I try to explain to them is, but you may have to take a few seconds to get around the filter. And even just within those few seconds, sometimes that's all it takes for us to realize what we're doing, for us to realize what's wrong and what's right, and then to stop the urge. Because we all have instincts. We all have negative emotions. We are all experiencing challenges on a daily basis. It's about being able to rein those emotions in and control those instincts and think before we act. Pachas Kamayim, Yaakov Avinu was telling Reuven, water just flows. It doesn't stop. You put it down on an incline and all of a sudden it will go down and it won't stop. We have to think. We have to take the time to contemplate, what am I about to do? What am I really thinking inside before we put anything into action? They say over one of the well-known Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael that he had what's called an anger hat. Every time he felt like he was getting angry, he would automatically go to the closet, open up the door, take out the hat, and put the hat on. What was this accomplishing? Because in those 10 seconds it took him to walk to the closet, to open up the door, reach up for the hat, and put it on his head, just within those 10 seconds, that's all he needed to think a little bit. Yes, I'm angry, but what do I want to be doing? What should I be doing? Am I letting my anger get the best of me? And that's all it took. And that's all it should take for us. That when we feel our emotions getting the best of us, to be able to just stop for a second, take a step back, and just contemplate and think. What am I feeling right now? Why am I feeling it? Why am I about to act this way? Is it for the right reasons or for the wrong reasons? And in just even those few seconds, Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach, by having this insight and perspective into ourselves, all of our actions should be elevated and done in the proper way. Thank you very much and have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you for listening. Feel free to learn about all the programs that the Skokie Community Kol has to offer. For any questions, suggestions, or to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, please email us at info@skokiekolel.org.